On September 9th and September 11th, films by director James Redford will be shown in Crown Point and Gallup, with special guest Koryanka Kilcher, singer-songwriter and actress known for the films Teyata, The New World, and Firelight. Redford's films, Resilience and Paper Tigers, will be shown at the Navajo Tech Wellness Center, Lower Point Road, State Highway 371 in Crown Point, New Mexico, on Friday, September 9th, starting at 10 a.m. Then, at the El Moro Theater, 207 West Cole Avenue in Gallup, New Mexico, on Sunday, September 11th, starting at 1 p.m. Q&A plus meet and greet with director James Redford and actress Koryanka Kilcher will accompany the film screenings. Admission comes with the donation of non-perishable canned goods or a monetary donation benefiting Navajo staff development and training. For details, you may visit nnstaffdevelopment.navajo-nsn.gov.
I'm here with James Redford, director of two documentaries, Paper Tigers and Resilience. They're going to be shown in Crown Point, New Mexico at Navajo Technical University at the NTU Wellness Center this Friday, September 9th, with Resilience showing at 10 a.m. and Paper Tigers at 11 a.m. Admission to these screenings at Navajo Tech and at El Moro Theater in Gallup will come with a donation of non-perishable canned goods or a monetary donation benefiting Navajo staff development and training. Isn't there going to be a panel?
Yes, there'll be a panel discussion, I think, at the conclusion of Paper Tigers, but I'm not exactly sure.
There's also a screening of Resilience at El Moro Theater this Sunday, September 11th, starting at 1 p.m., and then that followed by Paper Tigers at 2 p.m. Admission to these screenings at Navajo Tech and at El Moro Theater in Gallup will come with a donation of non-perishable canned goods or a monetary donation benefiting Navajo staff development and training. And again, do you think there will be some Q&A afterwards?
I would imagine so. I mean, usually, you know, I end up in a pretty interesting dialogue with folks that attend, and I'd be happy to do that. I look forward to it. These two films, broadly speaking, were made to address what we now know as toxic stress and adverse childhood experiences. Now, those are the two buzzwords going on right now in the social work world, because what we now know, and really for the last 15 years, but the science is finally gaining momentum among practitioners, is that chronic abuse and neglect for children, we all know that's a bad thing, just spiritually or, you know, psychologically. But it turns out that it's a physiological toxin that can literally change the brains and bodies of children that are exposed and don't have intervention, don't get support, so that as they grow up, their brains and bodies change in ways that makes it very hard for them to be successful, you know, in general in our communities. But it also creates a far greater risk of a whole host of health issues that are physiological in nature, cancer, diabetes, respiratory disease, high blood pressure, you name it. Children who have had, you know, five or more of these experiences growing up, there's a serious health risk. And most people just don't know this. I think most people know we ought to do better by our children, but most people don't realize, you know, that if you intervene and offer support even in difficult environments and show a little bit of light towards kids and support, that you can offset these terrible risks to their health and their development. So both movies were made to take a look at that issue and tell the story in a way that might make sense to, you know, to everybody, because honestly, we'd all be better to understand this. I know, you know, everybody who has any sort of personal history, it can help you understand your own story. And also, you know, knowing what the risk of neglect and abuse is, may inspire people to be more attentive and just go the extra step and be a one caring adult for a child. So the films have now premiered, and they're in their community screening stages. Our community screening stages means that we work with entities and other concerns that are really invested in the well-being of children, and, you know, feel that the messages in this movie can be very helpful at the community level. So I've been everywhere. I've been around. I've been in other countries with both films. I'm going to Kazakhstan with the Resilience in a month. And, you know, we've had over 3,600 screenings of Paper Tigers worldwide thus far. And when I just remember, you know, I mean, I grew up part-time in Utah. I've spent a lot of time in the Four Corners area. I love it. You know, I love it. I love the area. And I've had the pleasure of spending a lot of time on the Navajo Nation. And, you know, so for me, it was just a matter of I don't know whether, you know, the people that work for the betterment of children in this community might be interested in these films. Why don't I see? So that was when I made the connection to Earl Tully and Layla, and that really came through Koyaki Kilcher and her mother, that relationship. And so they seemed pretty supportive of the value of bringing the films there, so I was more than happy to come and show the movies. I met Koyaki Kilcher last February, and, you know, it was more that, you know, in talking with her, you know, she felt that these ideas were really potent and they really resonated. And she just felt that, you know, this is something that might, you know, resonate in any number of places in Indian country. I mean, the truth is what we're finding is that there's no particular place. And it's really for everybody. And these films are actually set. Paper Tigers was set in the small community of Walla Walla, Washington, in Washington State, at an alternative high school. And that film followed, spent a year at a school that understands the science about how brains are changed. Because by the teenage years, a lot of kids who have been subjected to chronic abuse and neglect, they're actually thinking and seeing the world a little differently. And the principal had the insight to say, if you believe this, then what would we do differently if you believe this science? So he did a number of things differently, and everything that you would hope would get better did, and all the things you'd hope would diminish also went away in terms of, you know, tardiness, absenteeism, arrests, you know, dropouts, all the bad stuff decreased, all the good stuff, GPAs, graduation rates, all went up. So yes, it was set in Walla Walla, Washington. It's a very small rural area. But we're finding that it seems like wherever you are in this world, if you're trying to do things right for children, these movies have value. Resilience is a little bit more of an all-arounder to really help people understand toxic stress, the science, what it does, and how it is that really focusing on making sure there's one caring adult in children's lives can really offset all the risk of the stress.
How did you get interested in the topic of toxic stress? I assume that it's related to what we know about post-traumatic stress.
They are kindred, no doubt. Post-traumatic stress is a little different in that, you know, it varies according to what the situation is. Usually you're talking about, you know, we tend to think about it in terms of sort of more acute experiences, you know, and can be very specific and finite acute experiences. And it can also happen to anyone at any point in time, regardless of your age or where you are in your own development. Whereas toxic stress is a little bit more focused on the biology of stress in pediatrics for children. And, you know, because as your body and brain is developing as a youngster, the way you literally can become physiologically a different person. You know, and we need to understand that these risks can be offset if you intervene, but, you know, this is more of a developmental issue versus the sort of PTSD you think of with our returning soldiers and people that have experienced horrific, you know, specific horrific experiences. But, you know, in the end, I mean, we're still talking about the profundity of that negative experiences and how important it is for us to provide services and intervene and help people to recover from them, because you can if you get the right help.
Now, with regard to the subject, how did you come to get interested in producing these films and directing these films? What were the steps that got you moving in this direction?
Well, these films are made by a company called KPJR Films, and it's a company I started with a woman named Karen Pritzker out of Chicago. Karen is an investor and a philanthropist, and we met about 5-6 years ago. We met at an event for dyslexia, and as it turns out, it runs in both of our families, and we were, you know, both equally as sort of passionate about, you know, the difficulties of dyslexia, but also how poorly understood it is and how there are so many misconceptions about it being an academic death sentence. And from there, you know, she asked if I would do a short little film for the Yale Center for Dyslexia and Creativity. And from there, you know, a year later, we had an hour documentary that premiered at Sundance and then was sold to HBO and has gone on to become sort of this, you know, a really helpful tool. More broadly, we've had thousands of screenings of that film. And I think that experience was the one that made me and Karen realize, you know, helpful tools in the audiovisual age that we live in, they can really play an important role in helping us all move forward. And so our company is really focused on telling stories that can be helpful tools. And, you know, we don't get coverage in Vanity Fair, but we have discovered and developed a great way to get the film where it can really make a difference. And that isn't to say it isn't on Amazon and iTunes and all those things. In fact, Paper Tigers just went on iTunes a couple of days ago. So, you know, we're out there in the marketplace, so to speak. But the core thing are these community screenings, because the dialogues that they engender in the audience can be, you know, really powerful and very often lead to important next steps within that community, because we don't have the answers. So we try and point to some things, and every community is going to have its own particular issues and its own, like, right solutions. We're just trying to spark a supportive dialogue.
Jamie, what inspired you to become a filmmaker?
Well, you know, storytelling's big in the family. I'm Robert Redford's son, but the storytelling goes back 2 or 3 more generations than that. And I was always very interested in that, the expression. I mean, why people that tell stories? It's a strange thing. You got to be a little crazy to want to do it. And I started out as a screenwriter. And did that for many years. In fact, I was, and I don't know if this puts me in a good spot or a bad spot there in Navajo country, but I was the screenwriter on the Tony Hillerman series, in early 2000s, 15, 16 years ago. And, you know, spent a good amount of my time writing four movies. But at the same time, I had always been interested in doing documentaries. And in fact, you know, back in the late 90s, my first documentary I produced was socially oriented. It was about understanding what organ donation is from a different point of view. And I made that film because personally I received a liver transplant in 1993 due to an autoimmune disease I had since childhood. And it was an eye-opener for me to go back out into the world after that surgery and see that there were so many misconceptions about organ donation and some legitimate concerns, and what's the best way to sort of have an honest but helpful dialogue. So that movie was called The Kindness of Strangers, and that sold to HBO as well. In fact, that's when I began my relationship with HBO. So I, you know, that started, and, you know, ultimately by the end of the first decade of the 21st century, I just got to the point where I felt like my time was better spent focusing solely on documentaries. Just more rewarding. Just felt like there was more value. You know, you write a screenplay and you're really only dealing with half a dozen people, and maybe not your most favorite people.
You mentioned your family connection. At any point, was there interest in being involved, or have you been involved in any way with Sundance
Institute?
Yes.
No, I like those guys. I was actually in college the year the whole thing started. I'm 54 now, and so, you know, I remember 1985, the first year attending that festival in Park City, and, you know, they were handing out free tickets to try and get people to go into the movie theater. There was lots changed in that time. And I also remember the labs for the filmmakers that have been now hosted at the Sundance Resort outside of Provo, Utah, for the last three decades. So I've seen it all, I know it all, and I'm very fond and familiar with the people there. But I'm not on the board. I'm busy with my own things. Another interest of mine is called the Redford Center, and that's actually a nonprofit concern involving the environment and making films that deal with the environment in a way that maybe audiences can connect to a little bit more. And at the Redford Center, now I'm working with the Institute coming up on some environmental issues sort of in conjunction. So I have a really good relationship. I mean, they're really amazing. I mean, you know, they have been supportive and great to work with all along the way.
It's interesting that you're very connected with a lot of different aspects of environmentalism. And in a way, you could think of these documentaries that you've been producing as dealing with the environment of the body, the mind, the soul, and how environmental factors, whether chemical or stress-related, can impact on one's life.
Well, you know, I've been wondering how long it was going to take for someone to make that insight. You know, because it's really true. I mean, that it is. It's all about the environment. I mean, we tend to think. I mean, the word has been sort of hijacked to mean sort of elitist, tight green circle. In general, like if you ask younger folks, and I get that, but for me, the environment is really, you know, is reality in a lot of ways. It's just, you know, it's the word that represents the way you interact with the world and the way the world interacts with you and your relationship with that reality, whether it's, you're right, whether it's experiential or, you know, toxicological. I did a film called Toxic Hot Seat about flame retardants in our furnishings that shouldn't be there. So, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, I think maybe in a lot of ways it just comes down to help. And by the way, I mean, one of the thoughts I had when I was researching this information about toxic stress and ACEs and the importance of showing compassion and curiosity and the power, if you connect kids who have been affected and at risk, if you connect them to a healthy community, you know, how we now know in medical science that that's as powerful as any prescription drug. Now, you know, that's not to say that I'm not downing on traditional Western medicine, but we now have a scientific basis for what, you know, in the limited amount of time I spent in the Four Corners area and getting only a passing understanding of Navajo culture, you know, this the healing ceremonies, you know, if you just put, you know, the protective factors that help against ACEs, and you take a Navajo healing ceremony and you put them next to each other, you see it's like it's the best possible prescription. And, you know, I always thought about that over the last few years, and maybe that's why I thought maybe there might be some interest in these movies, but that's just an amateur guess, you know.
One of the problems with traditional medicine, i.e. the AMA model, is that you have issues like toxic stress, and the traditional approach in modern medicine is to treat responses to chemicals and other environmental issues, such as stress factors, with more chemicals. And that is not an effective approach, although more recently there has been interest in codifying the uses of THC, cannabis, to help with certain issues. The problem is that, again, you're adding another chemical.
I am not a doctor. I'm not a researcher. I'm just this dude that tells stories. But I have had a lot of experience. I've been down the health road. I'm a catalog. I'm a walking horror show in some ways of what can happen physiologically. And so I only use my own experience to say that, we really shortchange ourselves by not asking the deeper questions about how to be healthy. The problem in my mind is, if you ask the deeper questions, you've got to go deep. And it takes time and energy, and you need good people providing counseling and services. You need to be willing to create support for programs that require time from communities and an ability to consistently provide the sort of wraparound supports that can really offset these things. And it's, in my mind, part of the reason pharmaceuticals are so prevalent is that, it allows the medical community to check the box and say end of story. And that isn't to say that there aren't cases where anti-anxiety medications or other things aren't the right things, or antidepressants. I don't want to come off as someone that's trying to down on these treatments. They're very important. But you're never going to get to the core health of things if you're ignoring the broader environment.
Now, before I go to you for some closing comments, let me read what we've been announcing. On September 9th and September 11th, films by director James Redford, son of Robert Redford, will be shown in Crown Point and Gallup, respectively, with special guest Koryanka Kilcher, singer, songwriter, and actress known for the films Teata, The New World, and Firelight. Redford's films, Resilience and Paper Tigers documentaries, will be shown at the Navajo Tech Wellness Center, Lower Point Road, State Highway 371 in Crown Point, New Mexico, this Friday, September 9th, starting at 10 a.m. Then at the El Moro Theater, 207 West Cole Avenue in Gallup, New Mexico, on Sunday, this Sunday, September 11th, starting at 1 p.m. Both events tentatively are planning a Q&A plus a meet and greet with director James Redford and actress Koryanka Kilcher, who will accompany or follow the film screenings. Admission comes with a donation of non-perishable canned goods or a monetary donation, I believe, benefiting Navajo staff development and training. For details, you may visit nstaffdevelopment.navajo-nsn.gov. Now, what did I get wrong?
Well, my understanding is that Koryanka is going to be there for the screenings on the 11th. I think she's filming right now. She's doing a lot of good stuff right now. She's coming in from location. I don't think she's going to be there on the 9th at Crown Point. I do know that we're both, one of the things I really look forward to is hanging out on the 10th and being there for the fair. And I think we're going to be together at the fair, maybe. I can't really remember what the details are. But the bottom line is, anyone that wants to see, say hello to Koryanka, I think the safe bet would be the 11th in Gallup. And otherwise, it's all good.
Any closing comments, anything else you'd like our listeners to know about your films, about your career, or about your passions?
The passion part of it is simple. I make pilgrimages down there quite often. I go to Canyon de Chelly quite often. It's just such a wonderful country, and I just feel honored to be able to come back and the mere idea of being somehow helpful is just a great honor for me. So I look forward to seeing everybody and hanging out.
Thank you so much. I've been speaking with director James Redford, who will be present for the screenings of two of his documentaries, Paper Tigers and Resilience. Paper Tigers, subtitled Stressed Brains Can't Learn, and Resilience, a broader perspective, subtitled The Child May Not Remember, But the Body Does. Thank you so much for chatting with me today, Jamie.
Sure thing. Sure thing. And thank you.